Wyoming author Stephen Horn's new novel, The Pumpkin Eater, is creating quite a stir in the world of brainy mystery literature. It's recently won the 2014 Benjamin Franklin Gold Award in Mystery and Suspense. I sat down with Horn to find out what it was about his plotline that's keeping readers on the edge of their seat.
This book is the first in a new series that I've started called A Sam Dawson Mystery. The title of the book is The Pumpkin Eater. Sam Dawson is not your typical sleuth. He is a photographer, and he publishes tabletop books. And his specialty is finding lost graveyards and little-known cemeteries. And he discovers two tombstones that are identical, 1,000 miles apart, same name, same epitaph. And that launches him on this investigation.
Can you talk a little bit about where you came up with the idea for this story?
I got interested in it because one day, sitting bored in an airport waiting for the perpetually late flight, I discovered that just about everybody in that airport looked like somebody I knew. And you could say that individual looks like Uncle Harry, or that woman looks just like a teacher I had in third grade. And you start to understand that the human gene pool, it really is somewhat limited, and we all are, in fact, related. They've traced our inheritance all back to one woman in Northern Africa. That combined with a news story that I heard many years ago about the mad doctor. This one happened to be a gynecologist obstetrician in Utah who was inseminating his patients. And I, as a scientist, as a zoologist, I'm interested in sociobiology. I thought, what an interesting cheating strategy that is for that individual to overwhelm the gene pool with his own genotype. Isabel Allende once admonished writers to write what should not be forgotten. And this was a period in American history that I thought needed to be remembered because no one today hardly is aware of the eugenics movement. But it was a very pervasive movement in this country. It was taught in all the schools, all the universities, preached from the pulpit on Sundays. You saw it in the theater when you went to the matinee on Saturday. It was just taken for granted. Everyone believed in eugenics, and it was really, truly pseudoscience.
So you do have quite a colorful resume. Could you talk a little bit about your background?
I spent a good portion of my life as an academic here at UW. I'm former dean of the College of Agriculture, professor of animal science. My background, though, is pretty much in the hard sciences.
How did you find yourself turning to fiction writing?
I've always written fiction. It was something that was just a passion. I've been writing for just about 30 years. I would write before I would come to work in the morning. I'd get up and start writing usually between 4 and 4:30, write till 6 or so, and I never published anything. And I would write these things, and most of them ended up as just drafts. So I started, once I retired, which was 5 years ago, I started writing in earnest and still have that unfortunate routine of getting up at 4 in the morning.
What research did you end up doing for the story in terms of these graveyards? Did you go and visit lots of graveyards?
Each chapter begins with an epitaph, and all of those were collected by me personally over a long period of time. I've always had sort of a passion for photographing and collecting epitaphs from cemeteries. And you can tell a lot about a community by going into the cemetery. You can tell the ethnicity. You can tell, you know, how much they were impacted by the flu epidemic of 1918. There are lots of things you can learn about people and a community just by going to the cemetery. But yes, I collected all the epitaphs, and they're all real, with the exception of one. That epitaph was a fictional character that goes back to my debut novel, which everyone keeps asking me if I'm going to do a a sequel. And there's a so that's the clue, that's the hint in this book as to whether or not there will be a sequel to Another Man's Life, my debut novel.
I'm wondering if you might be able to read, you know, just even just a page.
Let me just read the first couple paragraphs of chapter one. And the chapter starts off with a quote by Charles Darwin. "No one supposes that all the individuals of the same species are cast in the very same mold." His dead sister gazed back at him. She was smiling. Sam could not breathe. A cold veil descended over him, and the night became silent. The flashlight's beam that illuminated her face began to shake. Her long blonde hair spilled over her shoulders. Her blue eyes appeared dark behind the thick glasses, and her toothy grin reflected the light's beam back at him. She was as he remembered her. Julie had been dead for 25 years. She had remained 17 for a quarter century, and now, in 1999, she stared back at him from the darkness, unchanged since 1975, when he was 12 and saw her last. Sam forced a breath and inched the flashlight's beam upward on the stone marker. The name Genevieve de Follett was chiseled sharply into the polished red granite. She had been born 9 years before Julie, but had died at the age of 17. And that introduces the reader. That's what we call in the trade the hook, and introduces the reader to part of the mystery. Sam's sister has been dead for 25 years. Her body had never been recovered, and now in a cemetery 1,000 miles from his home, he sees a picture of her on a tombstone.
Thank you so much for reading.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
That was Wyoming author Stephen Horn. His novel, The Pumpkin Eater, as well as his first book, Another Man's Life, were released by Cheyenne publisher Granite Peak Press.